afternoon.
Welcome to Why Is This a Thing?
Hello.
Adam's over there. Nick's in Cincinnati, hungover as hell.
Yeah.
Ugh. So many beers.
Fucking drunk.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Oh my God.
How do you feel right now? You still feel severely hungover, or are you kind of coming out?
I'm having my morning coffee now at 1 p.m. I also forgot it was daylight savings time, which is the worst night to be hungover.
No!
Yeah, that's right.
Especially when you have to get up the next morning and watch a documentary about street art. It's really tough.
Oh, that must have felt like a hangover in and of itself.
You know, I ordered Uber Eats. I got a sandwich delivered. Sandwich is the best hangover food.
That's a good question. I've always been curious, what is the best hangover food?
It's a sandwich, hands down. It's a sandwich.
Well, I don't really know. I've had good experience from having a popsicle.
That works. All right, let me tell you, first off, you don't eat anything that needs utensils, all right? You're going to try to have me eat noodles with a chopstick, while I'm hungover. It's not happening, all right?
Okay.
Finger food.
All right.
You don't want anything that's you have to heat up or anything.
Right.
I don't eat cold pizza personally, so pizza's out for me.
Okay.
Well, cold pizza, no. I think traditionally is the hangover food of choice, right?
Yeah,
in a way.
I don't do that. That's disgusting.
Here's the thing. I prefer cold DiGiorno pizza to pizza pizza.
Pizza pizza.
You know, just regular.
Did you just say you prefer frozen pizza to cold regular pizza?
No. I mean, what I'm saying is I make the DiGiorno pizza, I put it in the oven, I have like half of it, right? And then I put it in the fridge. And then I come back to it the next day and I don't heat it up. I prefer it cold.
What the fuck is wrong with you? That's disgusting.
Do you suck on it to thaw it out?
Like, no, I just eat the
pizza. Do you use an ice pick?
I don't put it in the freezer, you moron. I just...
What exactly are you doing here? What are you doing?
I eat.
Do you put it under a hair dryer the next morning? What the hell?
It gets a magnifying glass in the window.
I put it on a stick and I stick it in my fireplace.
Okay, you roast it like a marshmallow.
Got to get it smoky, you know?
And just eat it right off the twig.
Have any idea how good that is, Nico?
I would not know. I've never had not a frozen DiGiorno pizza on a stick, nor any pizza of any kind.
The frozen DiGiorno pizza out of the fridge is the best thing ever.
Okay.
It's better than sex.
Wow. I like microwaved pasta a lot, like reheated pasta the next day.
Oh,
I don't know why.
Okay.
I genuinely like it better.
I'm always curious about stuff like this, like, because there are certain leftovers that are just awful and they can go fuck themselves. But then there's others that I'm like, you know what? This might actually be better, you know? It happens every
once
in a
while. You don't like pasta, right, Adam?
No.
Yeah.
I thought you've never had pasta.
I've had pasta. I've had pasta now that I've been dating Abby, but to this...
You had not eaten pasta until you started dating your girlfriend.
Yeah, that's correct.
Wow.
And now that I've had it, I can confirm that, yeah, I still don't like it.
Pasta is one of those things that I'll never order at a restaurant because it's so cheap. Like, you can get a box for $1 and feed like an army.
Right.
So Abby, I'm not going to go to a restaurant and buy... I never order pasta.
Abby says literally the exact same thing. That's so funny.
It makes no sense. Yeah,
it's true, like, though. It makes... I do get that, yeah.
So, but like, for some reason, after making pasta the day before, I'm always like, oh, it was good. And then I reheat it in the microwave the next day. And, like, I can acknowledge that it tastes more like cardboardy and artificial, but I love it. It's just so much better.
Mm. Okay. Interesting.
Wow. What a take.
Well, see, I have a similar experience with like a Five Guys burger sometimes. Like, I love a regular burger that's off the grill and whatnot, but I also really, really love them when they're, you know, I've taken them out of the fridge for a day, you know? I don't know why.
I've never had leftovers from Five Guys.
Yeah, well, see, I'm weird. I sometimes...
You save your fast food for later?
I sometimes don't finish it. I don't save McDonald's, because that is never good.
Right.
That is never good.
You'd be surprised. I think that McDonald's burger would hold.
I mean, nor is it necessary, though, right? Like, the whole point of McDonald's is I'm not going to take a doggy bag out of McDonald's.
No.
I mean, I'm getting it so I can finish it in the next 5 minutes.
I mean, Five Guys is slightly more sophisticated than something like McDonald's.
You ever had a cold french fry, like, 4 hours later?
It's awful.
I was watching Family Feud once. I know this is not like Nielsen ratings. This is not like a statistical. It's not like the Rasmussen poll here. But they had like a question, what's the best food that's cold a day later? And french fries was in like the top four.
What?
What the hell?
It's
who enjoys cold french fries?
Nobody enjoys cold French fries. They went to a weird spot where everyone was nuts.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, it's all soggy and like cold and gross.
It just tastes bad. Yeah. Like, why would you eat it?
It's slimy and shit.
No, I can't get down to that.
Family Feud. That was a question.
Every once in a while, that happens on Family Feud, where I'm just like, "What?" Like the answer makes no sense.
Who
to
are
me.
The 100 people that they're asking? I want more specific.
Yeah, exactly.
Information on the
we asked
size.
100 Amish.
Well, I think that would be a lot more insightful than just 100 random
people. Can you
imagine
that show? We asked 100 Asians.
I'm inventing that version of Family Feud.
Oh my god, that would just be like racist Family Feud.
Yes!
That's what that would be.
That'd be so goddamn funny.
Yes.
Oh,
well, Black Family Feud would be
a
lot
idea.
Of fun.
Oh no.
On the BET network or whatever, you know? Well, you know, Family Feud though already does that with the families. I don't know if you ever watch, but there's always the white family and the minority family competing against each other. It's never two white families or two minority families. It's the whites against everyone else. So they're already like provoking the race war here.
I don't know if that's actually true.
It is 100% true. Watch Family Feud. I know I watch it more often than you.
You think they're trying to be racist and
I don't think they're trying to be racist. I just think that that's the groups that they use.
You might be
I've definitely seen episodes where that is not the case.
I disagree.
I watch Family Feud frequently, and you're half right.
I'm entirely right.
I mean, sometimes it's you know, sometimes it's both a black family, you know. Sometimes they do both.
Very rarely.
Yeah, it's not. They don't separate them nearly as much. I think
they are. I don't know why. I don't know if it's conscious or subconscious, but I think that they do.
You know what it is?
What?
It's Steve Harvey. It's entirely Steve Harvey.
I am all Steve Harvey'd out.
Me too.
I used to love Steve Harvey.
Me too.
Like those first couple seasons of Family Feud where Naked Grandma happened and
yeah.
And all those great clips. Pork, you pine.
Oh, no.
Phrase that starts with pork, you pine.
Why are you Steve Harvey'd out? I think he's fine.
I just, too much. He's got a talk show. He's on Miss America every year. Messing up the Miss America results.
I guess it helps that I don't watch TV.
Mm. Yes, me too. Except for The Bachelor, which is ending, by the way, you know, come tomorrow.
Man,
and
Adam
Tuesday.
Is so desperate to talk about The Bachelor.
Yes.
Every chance.
Every time I see him.
I think this is the third week in a row where I brought up The Bachelor.
I think it is.
I think I'm just, you guys just need to crack and start watching.
I don't understand how you can do that and not do Survivor, though. I really don't get it.
Maybe it's just too much. Maybe I only want a slight taste of reality television, and that just so happened to be the thing that I found.
Survivor is legitimately good television, though.
Is
like, it's well-produced, and, like, you would appreciate the cinematography and the production value. Like, it's legitimately good.
What do you think, Nick?
I think the audio mixing is pretty bad.
On Survivor?
Yeah, I think the music's a little too loud. I can't hear the people over the loud fucking drums all the time. It's constantly just boom, 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 boom. I'm like, chill.
It's not like The Bachelor, though, that uses like royalty-free corporate motivational video music.
At least you can hear what they're saying, though.
There's always a chime in The Bachelor whenever like something. It's like, jing.
Well, listen, The Bachelor is literally just a giant commercial to sell roses. It's the rose industry.
Yes, that's accurate.
You know? When are we going to do reality show month? We've been talking about this for years.
Because there's too much reality television.
When are we going to do like shitty MTV reality
shows?
What are you
going to
pick
from?
That sounds like a perfect thing to do in February.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck off, dude.
That's a good idea.
We got to do Love is Blind. I haven't watched it yet.
I've
but
seen
I hear
it.
It's Oh, you've seen it!
I've seen all of it.
What the hell?! You've seen every episode of Love is Blind?
Mm-hmm.
What's Love is Blind?
It's about love being blind. It can't see anything and it runs into walls and shit.
Is it about blind people trying to date? What is it about?
I wish it was that.
Okay, time out.
And then they make a spinoff, Love is Deaf.
Time the fuck out.
Love is paraplegic. Love has AIDS.
Stop it.
I'm still hung up on the fact that Adam has seen every episode of Love is Blind.
I don't know what we're talking about.
All right, we need to take a half hour, and you need to just get all of this off your chest.
Okay.
Please, why are you watching this show? Abby likes it.
Abby was like, let's sit down and watch Love is Blind.
How many episodes are there?
And I'm like, okay.
How many episodes are there?
I think there's like 11.
There's 11, and they're an hour long?
10 or 11? Yeah.
So you've seen 11 hours of Love is Blind.
And the reunion, which just came out.
Wow. Okay, so explain the premise of the show.
Yeah.
The premise of the show is that a bunch of random ass people, one side girl, one side guy, they go into two separate pods, right? But they have audio linked up so that they can hear each other on the other side of the pods, but they cannot physically see each other. So the whole point is that you're going to start out the foundation of your relationship just based on the personality of this human being on the other side of that wall.
Right.
And you're either going to, and you essentially need to leave the pod proposing to the person. And then you need to take a couple weeks and get to know them a little better physically. And then at the end of it all, you're going to have a wedding. And at the wedding, you are going to decide right then and there if you actually want to get married.
Oh, so there's like, so you have to go to the wedding, but you might say, I don't.
Yep. And that happens. That actually happens.
Oh,
it
no.
is so fucking cruel. I mean, I thought The Bachelor was fucked up.
That sounds incredible.
This is the most evil show I think I've ever seen in my life.
At the same time, this is what I hate about reality TV, though. Like, even those jokes I was making before, those all sound like real reality TV premises.
Oh, like, Love is Deaf, it could definitely be a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, couldn't you see a show, like, envision a show on Netflix, soundproof earmuffs, and you're just trying to communicate everything about your relationship with physical body language.
Yep.
I mean, I could definitely see that as a premise.
Yeah. That's it, though.
We should just invent that show. It'll definitely be a thing. Love is Deaf.
Oh, it's easy. But, I mean, let me stress that the show is incredibly entertaining, and there's some real shitheads on this show.
Well, duh.
And I mean,
wait, you know, it'll be... Okay, sorry, hold on. I'm getting carried away with this idea of Love is Deaf.
Well, if you're more passionate about it.
What if they only get people who have, like, awful voices? Like, so once you finally hear them talk, they're like, I love you!
This is what I've been waiting for, though. Okay, but this is the audacity of the show, and is that you have a fairly decent, eclectic mix. There's this one, like, short guy, like, shorter than me, right? And they focus on him for, like, one shot, and then we never see him again because they realized, oh, he's not going to end up with anybody.
Oh.
Yeah.
How many people are on this show?
They start out, there's, like, I want to say there's, I think, 10 guys and 10 girls.
So they start with 10 and 10, and do they, like, whittle it down as these people break up? Is that the idea?
The documentary slowly focuses in on...
Don't call it a documentary.
But it's what it is, technically.
Okay.
But it focuses in on, like five couples, essentially.
Okay. Oh.
Some of which are really good. And some of... There's a few that are actually kind of interesting. But then there's a shit ton others that are just train wrecks.
Right.
And that's where a lot of the fun comes in. And it's something, man.
But here's the thing, though. I mean, this concept has existed for like 40 years because The Dating Game was this. Yes. This is just The Dating Game on steroids.
Yes.
Girl behind a wall and there's three bachelors and she has to pick one based on the answers they give. This is just taking it to the exploitative reality show level.
Yep.
Do you know Andy Kaufman was on The Dating Game?
Oh, no.
He was one of the bachelors on The Dating Game. It was one of the most incredible game show episodes ever.
What a disaster.
So good.
I would have loved to have seen that. Yeah. But I recommend it. It's a ton of fun. It's so fucked up. But
is it sad by the end of it?
There's a few sad ones.
Uh-huh.
But
do you have the coronavirus, by the way?
I think I do. Okay. It hit us, guys.
Please do not cough into the mic. You're going to get everyone else sick.
Everyone, we interchange our microphones over here.
Yeah. All the listeners.
Yeah.
Right into their ears.
You know what? I'm happy getting the listeners sick. Fuck the listeners.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah,
more
time to listen to our podcast, right? Exactly.
No, don't fuck the. We love the listeners who are defending us against the Michael Jackson truthers this week.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, that's right. You're not involved with this.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Love is Blind, man.
Yeah, give it a shot.
I definitely will.
It is about 1,000 times better than Miss Americana.
Okay.
Which is a piece of dog shit.
Wow, I still need to get around to that.
Oh, I hated it.
Why did you compare something good to something terrible?
What do you mean?
It's just, it has no meaning when you do that.
Well, I think people would argue that both are either good or both are either bad. And I'm taking the stance that no, one is good and one is definitively bad.
Okay. So, well, when you said 1,000 times better.
Yeah.
I got to get around to that Hillary doc first, because
there's a Hillary doc.
Oh, on Hulu. Oh, yeah.
Came out Friday.
Got to get around to that.
Bill Clinton talks a lot about why he slept with Monica Lewinsky and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because
he said he was trying to let off steam.
Yeah, because Hillary is a lizard person.
Right, exactly.
They might confirm that in the doc. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know.
Kind of, she has
this is just
tail.
This one scene where it's like she's peeling off her skin. You're like, what's going on?
Oh, God, I would love it. I would love it.
Oh, man.
No, I have another great idea, right, for another game show.
Oh, boy.
Think of it like possibly Jeopardy or Who Wants to Be a Millionaire-esque, or like Survivor-esque, where you go through these challenges and you earn money, right? But nobody else knows how much money everyone else has earned. So they all have like a secret bankroll in the back. And then at the end, they can place bids. It's like a dating show. They can place bids on the person they want to date.
Based on how much money they have.
Like prostitution?
Well, so... No. Place bids on the women they want to date, or the people they want to date, or whatever. And those people have to accept the bid or take the bid, but they don't know. They also get to take home whatever money they didn't spend on the bid. They get to take that home. So if somebody bids $1 million...
That you've been workshopping this for a while. This doesn't seem very spontaneous.
No, this is all came up to me in the last 5 minutes. I let you guys keep talking and thought it more.
This ain't bad. Yeah.
So then when you're accepting the to go with the person, you're hoping they have a big bankroll that they didn't spend. But you also want to be flattered by how much they were willing to spend on you.
This seems very superficial humanity.
Yeah.
Right
oh,
here.
Yeah.
But I kind of like it.
You ever seen Joe Millionaire?
Ooh.
Do you know what
and
Joe
this
Millionaire
doesn't have
is?
To be just like men or women. Like, this can go anywhere. I don't care how this goes, you know.
I have seen Joe. I don't remember it very well, but I have seen it.
Yeah. Joe Millionaire.
What the hell is Joe Millionaire?
It's The Bachelor. It's one guy and 30 women. And the man is a millionaire. And they're trying to compete for the affection of this millionaire until the show ends and he chooses a winner. And the guy reveals that he's not a fucking millionaire. He's just a guy.
He's an average Joe.
He's an average Joe. And for the last month, y'all thought you were vying for the affection of a millionaire. And now it's time for you to decide. Do you want to stick it out with Joe Schmo?
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Huge show back in the day. Huge show.
Yeah, I remember that show.
Reality TV really brings out the worst in people. I think that's the magic formula that makes it work.
Yeah. Well,
is when it brings out the worst in people.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Schmo was another one where they just staged a whole reality competition, except everybody's in on the joke except for the one guy. We actually knew, Rob and I knew the writer of that show.
What?
The head executive producer of that show. He was on RFF a bunch of times. Really fun show. It was just a bunch of like improv actors like playing pranks on this one guy, and he thinks he's in a competition, except everybody else is just pretending that they're in a competition.
This is like the Truman Show.
And exactly. It's exactly right. It's the Truman Show.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat.
That's very cruel as well.
No, reality television is just sinister. But it's very entertaining, but just the most evil thing you could possibly imagine.
I contend that if you watch it through the right lens, you can learn a lot about human beings.
You're not wrong.
I contend that. Some people don't believe me. Some people think it's just escapism. But I think if you really squint hard, you can learn a lot of devious things about people.
I feel like you learn things that you don't want to learn, though.
Yeah. Well, sure, certainly.
It's the people orchestrating it that bother me, that they're trying to get away with this stuff. And it is very exploitative, no matter how I look at it.
Yeah.
So. Here, we could just like make a game show called the Trolley Problem, or a reality show called The Trolley Problem. You know, The Trolley Problem, where there's like a car coming and it's going to run over a person.
Oh, right.
Or it's going to run over five people. But if you pull the thing, it'll kill one person. But you're complicit now.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
That entire show would just be about weaving through everyone to find the psychopath.
Well, no, I think you just every episode is like a different variation on the trolley problem.
Okay.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, there could be money in it. Either they have like the audience vote on what they would do, And if they match the audience, they win money. Or you can have like money actually be part of the trolley problem. Do you value human life or something? I don't know. That could be interesting.
Neat.
Yeah, that.
But I wouldn't watch any of these ideas I'm putting out there. That's the thing.
There's just too much reality television is the problem, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like, fucking cheap. It's easy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so cheap, and people watch it.
It's fucking candy.
Mm. Well, that was a fun conversation. I enjoyed that a lot.
I know.
Adam, you should watch Survivor. Go back and start with season one.
And have you watched Death Note yet?
Good point. I'm not going to talk about that. Documentary month.
2 years old.
Documentary month. We're doing Exit Through the Gift Shop today. A Banksy film. Exit Through the Gift Shop. 2010. We were going to talk about it on Movie Hall of Fame this week, and we decided to switch it up because I think that this documentary is very Wittat.
Yeah.
Y'all agree with that?
I don't. Well,
a little bit. Yeah.
Yes. No.
Yeah. I saw it when it first came out. All the way back in 2010, it was a big thing on Netflix. And I also remember the conversation around it being very heated. The debate over whether or not this is a documentary or a mockumentary or something in between. Does it matter if it's real or fake? Is that the point? And I also just found it to be an incredibly compelling story. You two watched it for the first time, though.
Yeah, I saw it a couple weeks ago.
Okay. What'd you think of it?
Is it real?
Well, I think
or do we not know?
We don't know. We don't know. No one knows.
Because this guy is still, Mr. Brainwash is still making art.
Yes.
Yes.
To this day. I think he just recently did something for the Kobe Bryant tribute.
Yeah. And who made Madonna's?
That was him.
That was him. Okay.
They mm-hmm. said that at the end of the film. Yeah. In the little.
Well,
So, you know, I don't know. As someone who is like, I'm interrupting Adam here.
He's so torn. That's why.
Well, I am.
He's not committed. That's the problem.
Yeah.
I will commit to my bad ideas.
Go ahead. Commit.
You need to commit, Adam.
Commit to your bad ideas.
Okay. As someone who is 3/8 French, I can confirm that it's a very Frenchman thing to do, to just sort of float on through life and just pretend you're like some genius artist and have no idea that you're not.
Stumbling into success is a uniquely French quality. Is that what you're saying?
I'm pretty sure this is how everything happened from like, you know, the like 11th century on in France. So, yeah.
I believe that. I will say I thought it was decent fun for the first hour. I find street artists to be absolutely boring and uninteresting in almost every way.
Really?
Yeah. And that was my biggest issue is that I was like, please, for the love of God, spend more time on this weird Frenchman.
Right.
And then the last 30 minutes happens and I'm like, okay, it's great.
Yeah.
That first hour was a bit hard for me. And then, like I said, it just, by the end of it, I was like, okay, there you go, movie.
Right.
And then it became something a little better.
How the hell do you find Criminal Activity boring?
I don't know. I mean, these are like the most hipster ideas of criminals. I'm going to shit on a wall and run away. It's like, who cares?
You're telling me Banksy shits on a wall and runs away? No, Adam.
That's essentially what he does.
No.
I don't find Banksy interesting. I don't find Shepard Fairier interesting
at all.
He went
to the West Bank.
Whatever, man.
A
I could
war
do that.
Zone.
I could do that if I wanted to.
Go do it. Get out of here.
I'll go do that. Get rid of me. You're going to see a bunch of Adam signs everywhere. Yeah, I don't find Banksy interesting in the slightest. And
oh,
I don't...
you're so fucking full of shit. Oh, fuck you.
What do you want
you?
From me? I just like, you paint on walls, dude. I don't know.
I wrote about this movie in my top 100 movies of the decade. I put it on the list. I think I put it in like the 60s or something. I put it pretty high on the list, actually. And I wrote about it something to the effect of, now when you watch it, it's only considered... I live in, you know, the lower part of Manhattan, interesting. But back in 2010, it classified as legitimately interesting. And I think there has been, like, over the years, we've become a little desensitized to Banksy's bullshit. I think. That's in 2010, it was really sexy and cool. It's like, where are these Andre the Giant stickers coming from? And no one knows who this dude is.
And well, so like, yeah, the idea of like viral art is sort of, it's sort of mainstream now.
I think that's a lot of it. Yes. I think the internet,
and a lot of that is
it.
Just with the internet. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's just all of this stuff has become sort of less interesting because of the sheer quantity of it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was, like I said, I don't pay attention to stuff like that. Like, I knew that, I knew who Banksy was, and I knew who Shepard Fairey was, but I never, like, paid attention to what was going on in the media surrounding them.
How about Space Invader? Are you a Space Invader?
I didn't know who Space Invader was until this.
So, Michaela actually saw or she's fairly certain she saw some of those Space Invader pieces in Europe when she was there. Hmm. I think she said in Paris.
Oh, cool.
But, you know, I don't see how you cannot find any of this interesting. The way that they like forced, especially the way that like Banksy forced the media to cover him intentionally or not. I think intentionally the films you're like, you know, rolling your eyes. I think intentionally, obviously. I think you agree with me.
Yeah.
But
that what was intentional?
The film sort of implies that it was all unintentional, that he just stumbled into his fame. I think that's bullshit. There's no way Banksy didn't know exactly what he was doing, right?
So the conceit of this documentary is there's this French guy named Mr. Brainwash who becomes fascinated by street artists. So he travels to LA and he begins filming street artists for a documentary. He's not setting out to be an artist. He is setting out to be a documentarian.
But he's not, though.
What do you mean?
He's not even setting out to be a documentarian.
No, he's just
filming. Oh, right. Yes, you're right. He's just doing it for himself.
He's just
filming
shit. He just films everything. And he, frankly, it's not even that he like, he just wants to be part of something. I think that's what it comes down to.
Yeah,
this guy just wants to be a part of something. And by telling people he's making a documentary, they open up to him.
Yes.
Yeah. No, precisely.
Eventually, he finds Banksy. And Banksy takes a real liking to this dude. And says, how about you give me your footage? So Mr. Brainwash gives him all this footage. And then eventually, it becomes this thing where Banksy is now directing Mr. Brainwash's documentary, where he takes the camera, turns it around, and makes Mr. Brainwash the subject of his own movie.
Yes.
And
so, to be clear, Mr. Brainwash had been filming for years and years and years and years and years, like probably 15 years or something.
Yeah.
10 years, something like that. I don't know. Nonstop.
Everything. And every single thing in his life.
Everything. Him pissing in a toilet.
Yeah. Literally.
You know, literally everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had been filming street artists for years before he even met Banksy. Mm-hmm. And he worked with Banksy for a while. And Banksy particularly took a liking to him after one moment in Disneyland where he pretty much almost got arrested. Mm-hmm. And he still didn't give up Banksy. He managed to delete the footage and get out of there without revealing who Banksy was or without getting anyone in trouble. Okay. And it was that moment where Banksy was like, this guy is definitely good. We got to keep him around. But you also forgot where Banksy asked him to make the documentary. Finally, he said, we need to pull the trigger now.
Right.
And then
and he tries to make the documentary and it's abysmal.
Right. It's nothing. It's just noise and images flying at the screen with no coherence.
Can
whatsoever.
We find that film?
I would love to watch that film.
Life Remote Control.
Yes. Oh, my God. That's a great name. I love that,
that
name.
That is a good name.
Life Remote Control.
But apparently it's just nonsense.
This movie fucking rules, dude. Life
Remote Control. Dude, it's out there. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, we have to find it.
Life Remote Control, hour and a half.
It's an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is available on YouTube. Oh, I only see a 15-minute cut.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a preview. I'm trying to find a Life full movie. Let's see if we can. We might have to track this down. I'd love to.
It does have
I'd
an IMDb to, page, yeah.
Yeah, so we might have to track this down somewhere. I don't know.
A series of miscellaneous film footage are put together to represent life as if watching it in front of a TV screen with a remote control. Directed by Mr. Brainwash.
Oh boy.
I found Life Remote Control the movie.com.
Oh wow. Is there a video on there?
Yes.
Oh, God. Are we going to watch this?
Oh, my God. This is, like, horrible, this website. I recommend you all go to LifeRemoteControlTheMovie.com.
Yeah.
And just struggle through that.
Struggle
Life
through
control
it.
themovie.com.
We'll find this. Maybe we'll try to do that this month as well, because I honestly genuinely want to watch this.
I can't find the server. It's not coming up.
Make sure your Adobe Flash is allowed.
Life remote control, the movie.
Yeah. So he makes this horrible, abysmal, nonsense documentary, and Banksy realizes, okay, he has the footage. I need the footage to make this movie, because clearly this guy's inept.
Yes.
And he says, why don't you go make some art? He says, you're done. Put the camera down. Go make art. And he says that, really, Banksy just says that to get rid of him. And he takes that as an order, and he goes out and he starts refinancing his house, maxing out all of his credit cards, spending his life savings, hiring a full team of artists to create all of these art installments for him. And then he asks all of his friends that he's made over the years, who are street artists, to use their fame to promote his thing. Okay. And creates this ginormous art show, and he starts managing to sell all of his pieces for $30,000, $24,000. He makes $1 million in a week.
Yes.
Doing this. And all of his art is just derivative of all of these artists that he's followed, and people like, obviously, wow, what the fuck's his name? The Campbell's Soup guy.
Oh, Andy Warhol.
Andy Warhol. So it's essentially all of the street artists that he's followed plus Andy Warhol. All of his work is just derivative of that.
Sure.
And everything that,
because again, he's not an artist.
Right. And it becomes, though, that everything that Banksy and all of these other street artists stand for, which is essentially this idea that art is not a commodity. Mr. Brainwash, it just becomes the opposite of what their entire art careers have been about. And they sort of created this monster.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
So by the end of this documentary, Banksy grows to resent Mr. Brainwash, this monster.
I don't
that he
know
created.
If that's true.
You don't.
Not entirely.
No, I don't.
I mean, there was probably a point in time where he resented him, but it feels like by the time they started making the documentary, he sort of reconciled with who the guy was. And I feel like he probably reflected a lot on his own career and his own art in a way. Because a lot of what makes this movie interesting in the third act for me was the fact that it's like, okay, when Mr. Brainwash actually goes and does all this stuff, it really puts into perspective as to what this stuff is actually worth.
Yeah.
Right.
So
I was under the impression that all of these artists who sort of helped build up Mr. Brainwash didn't resent him, but they sort of viewed it as almost like a sort of introspective piece of art themselves. You know,
well,
the way he came into existence and the way that he made a bunch of money off of essentially derivatives of their work, and the way that he just totally didn't get it. I think they all kind of to me, one of the messages of this movie is just kind of like, you know, to a degree, art can be bullshit.
Well, certainly. Yes. I agree.
But, and I think they kind of learned that through this process in a way.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Not if you consider this documentary art. And so it's sort of this meta idea that the story of this guy's rise to fame is just as artistically valuable as the art that he's producing.
I think that's what I'm saying, is that they thought this experience was a piece of art, not his work.
I don't get the sense that's what Banksy thought, though. I mean, because at the end of it, he's like, yeah, I'm never going to do this again. I'm not going to document another artist like this. I'm not going to, you know, nurture a guy and mentor him, because at the end of it, Mr. Brainwash becomes sort of this capitalistic evil figure to Banksy.
Yeah.
And I think he has a lot of regret about how he handled the situation, which, by the way, leads me to believe that this movie is not real. And I think this is a good time to transition here. Banksy in the past has been asked, is this movie real? And his answer was yes. And that was the end of the answer. He did not go on to explain what he meant by yes. He just said yes. Here's what it was. The Disneyland moment for me felt a little staged. The Disneyland moment did not feel organic.
I guess
that to me was like the heroic sort of
second act, I can trust this guy and now he's my friend movie moment. You know?
Maybe.
That is the moment that I believe was staged, certainly. And the rest of it, I sort of interpret this movie as Banksy getting out all of his rage at what he perceives to be coattail writers or illegitimate artists that find success in the corporate world. And that is what the title of the movie suggests. Exit Through the Gift Shop is this idea that at the end of this experience at the museum, it's all about making money in the gift shop. It's not about what you see in the gallery. It's what you see at the end, because that's the stuff that can be purchased.
I don't think it is as black and white.
Though, okay.
Uh-huh. Because Banksy says, well, I don't know what the moral is. And, you know, I don't think he's, I get the impression, and I'm gonna treat this under the assumption that this is all real. Okay. I think there are a lot of larger than life moments that certainly seem staged, and I'm not satisfied either way.
Yeah, but these people are kind of larger than life in a lot of ways, so it doesn't surprise me that they would go and do a lot of what they do.
So I'm gonna treat it as if it's real.
Okay.
Banksy seems a lot more unsettled. He seems a lot more ambiguous on his feelings for Mr. Brainwash. And especially I thought the part where Mr. Brainwash was hiring all of these young artists to help him make his projects, in a beautiful sort of way, he was bankrolling all of these unknown artists and helping them like be able to get, you know, he was like paying artists in a way, which is not something that is easy in LA. I actually kind of thought that section of it before it became this big money making machine was actually kind of beautiful.
And I also think that kind of antithetical to their mission statement, though, right?
Because, I mean,
possibly.
They go on, and I think a few of them even comment, like, yeah, half of what was in that gallery was entirely my work and entirely my friend's work and so on and so forth, which kind of made it a little sad in my eyes, too. It is cool that these artists are allowed to produce art to that extent, but at the same time, it sucks that they're not necessarily getting the recognition that they deserve. So.
Well, what I'm saying is that I think that there is a little bit more of an acceptance of a moral gray area on this, like an understanding that maybe it needs to be bankrolled somehow.
Well, Banksy is certainly the biggest hypocrite in the world if he doesn't acknowledge that, because his art sells for millions of dollars whenever it's put up to auction.
And granted, it's not like that he's is he the one putting it up to auction, though? Because
I imagine he's giving it to someone.
I've heard the story that he went to an auction and bought his own piece because he didn't want it being sold.
Okay. That seems like a publicity stunt, but maybe.
Could be.
I mean, remember that painting he did a couple years ago, that the second that it sold at the auction, it activated a shredder in the frame, and it shredded the painting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is all in service of the bottom line, I think, or at least a lot of it is. Maybe he didn't start that way. But I think the idea of the street artist, and I'm sure Banksy began like this, is that it is the one anonymous art form, is that you do it in the cover of the night. No one knows your face. No one knows your name. The art's just supposed to appear there and in its natural habitat live and exist. And you're not supposed to benefit from it in any way, shape, or form. The problem is that Banksy became a celebrity because of that, and his art became too popular. Mm-hmm. And so now I think, well, here's what I think. I think this movie is Banksy communicating his own regrets about his career under the guise of Mr. Brainwash. I think he's sort of venting a lot of his frustrations of himself on behalf of this other guy.
Like so the guy's taking the fall?
Well, just like, I sold out and I am this multi-million dollar celebrity, even though no one knows my face or my real name. And now Mr. Brainwash is going down that same path and is becoming a multi-million dollar celebrity. And that's not what art is supposed to be. And this is him expressing those frustrations.
Okay.
Am I off on that? What do you think?
It's fine. I don't care.
The one thing that's weird is, why is Mr. Brainwash still making art?
Yeah, that's
10 years later. That's what I find bizarre.
It's a good point.
Well, it's possible that he wanted to be an artist before this.
This is a long con, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like, that gets too complicated. This is where, like, I start hearing out, like when I talk to people, like who believe in certain conspiracy theories, and I'm just like, human beings aren't that convoluted, and they don't plan to that extent on something so individually. It doesn't work that way. They just kind of float.
That's true.
So, I mean, I don't know.
So if we want to say that elements of this movie are staged, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And possible. Maybe even likely. But to say that this guy, Mr. Brainwashed, I can never remember his real name. To say that he's not really who he is, I find unlikely.
Yeah.
I don't think he's an actor. No.
Watching this 10 years later, you know, 10 years ago, I might have said this is staged, you know.
Right.
But the fact that we're here 10 years later and he's still doing this.
Well, the theory is that Mr. Brainwash is just is like one of Banksy's helpers. Like Banksy is doing all this work and Mr. Brainwash is just the face of the operation. And he's a paid employee. He's kind of like the mall Santa Claus of street artists. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just I'm there to do Santa's work because he can't make it.
Okay.
You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like you could make that leap with a lot of documentaries, though. I don't know.
You know, this leads me to another question, which is, does it matter if the documentary is fake? Does it change anything?
I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel. Like I said, I don't care about
it. In a way, yes and no. This is sort of like a Schrodinger's cat kind of thing. It only matters if it becomes known that it's fake or real. As long as it's ambiguous, no.
Oh, I see.
Does that make sense?
So that's part of the art? The final piece, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
It's in the same way that, you know, knowing Banksy's identity would, you know, knowing whether or not, so there's some ideas that Banksy is a famous artist's alter ego.
Right.
And so this idea that, you know, he wouldn't be making millions off of his art because maybe this is actually just a side project where he doesn't make any money.
Mm.
You know, that's an idea that people have put out there. But if we knew for sure whether he was rich or whether he wasn't rich or whether he made all of his money from being Banksy or something else, maybe he's a fucking mechanic full time. Who knows? Right.
Yeah.
That would take away from the art.
Yeah. No. Yeah. The mystery is the value I think about this all the time because this is a common thing when someone's identity is unknown. I was thinking about this when the Ukraine whistleblower came out and people were speculating on his identity. And yeah, if the Ukraine whistleblower was John Bolton, then that would have been a story. But I just kept thinking to myself, guys, most likely you've never heard of this man. You have no idea who he is. And once you find out who he is, it's not going to mean anything to you. Why do you care so much?
The only reason they care is so they could dig through his Twitter profiles and Facebook profiles.
Yeah,
and
but
see
even
if
then,
he
it
wrote...
wouldn't be interesting. The answer is never going to be satisfying. When you ask yourself the question, who is this person? Who is this mysterious identity? The answer is always going to be unsatisfying because 99% of the time, Banksy is just going to be some schlub living in the UK. You would just see him at McDonald's and you'd have no idea. So once you find out the answer, yes, it becomes less interesting.
But this is where I come in. I'm like, I don't care who Banksy is. I don't want to know who he is. I could care less. If the guy walked up to me and said, I'm Banksy, I'd be like, that'd be funny. but I'd be like,
first you'd be like, I don't believe you.
I'd be like, okay. I'm dead serious, guys. I don't give a fuck about street artists.
Why?
There's just nothing that's interesting about them. I don't know.
As opposed to regular artists?
You don't find the street artist to actually be one of the most fascinating forms of art?
Nope.
Why?
How?
I don't know why. I just don't find it interesting. I look at what they're doing. I'm like, yeah, I don't care. I don't know.
The art doesn't move you or the fact that they're doing it on public property or what? You don't like vandals?
The art doesn't move me. And I don't know. I don't know. I'm just they're. What is interesting about them?
The fact that they don't make money off of their pieces. The fact that it is anonymous most of the time. I mean, the freaking the guy with the Obey stickers to me is like one of the most fascinating things to sweep
Banksy?
The nation.
Wait a minute.
No, Shepherd Farrier.
Oh, that's Shepherd Farrier. Oh, right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Shepherd Farrier.
And that's one of the most fascinating things to sweep the nation. That's crazy. All he did was just put these stickers up and repetition. I think it's fascinating.
The fact that there are Obey stickers in this town, and I have seen several of them just on street signs in this town, is an incredible thing.
No.
That's not incredible?
Not really.
That this viral sensation can exist in the real world and not just on the internet. It's not just people using the same hashtag. It's they're going out in a physical space and putting a sticker that exists in Europe somewhere on signs in suburban Connecticut.
Yeah, they caught a plane ticket and they're like, I'm just going to go here.
No, it's not that. It's so... And yes, the fact that it has the capacity to become a giant ecosystem where now I'm creating art somewhere and you're creating that same art in my name somewhere else.
What's more fascinating to me is the cultural response to it, less so than the people themselves. Because this documentary just proved to me that if I wanted to go around and, I don't know, if I did like bobblehead paintings and I just did them everywhere, if I did Rubik's Cubes painting everywhere, at a certain point
he's just pointing to objects in this room, by
exactly
the way. That's but what Adam's doing.
People would notice and they'd be like, oh, Mr. Rubik or whatever, I don't fucking know,
right?
The documentary also kind of,
that's what's more interesting,
it poses that question though, is like, does anything that we're doing actually have meaning? Like, and I think that's also a very interesting question.
That's more interesting than anything else in the documentary to me. Just the fact that any one of us could really do
art,
that. Yeah.
When I think about art in particular, like, I think... So first off, seeing art being sold like as a commodity that like just wealthy people are just buying art and stuff, it's disgusting.
Yes, it is.
It typically just completely removes the point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the world of art dealers is perhaps the most grotesque cesspool that exists in the world.
Yes.
Right. I'd much rather go to an Al Qaeda party than I would like an art show.
Wow, that's a hot take.
Well, go to an Al Qaeda party and then get back to us.
Okay, I don't think I would. But
well, like, you might in pieces.
Oh, here's Nico's head.
At the same time, seeing like art, like going to the Louvre or going to the Metropolitan or something, when I see these pieces of art, I talked about this recently, I have trouble being moved by it because I feel like I've never had art appreciation classes or anything. I've never studied it. For me, it's just difficult for me.
Well, it's inorganic, right? It feels like it's forced upon you. It's like you go to a museum and it's like
I feel like I'm expected to feel a certain way and I don't.
Exactly, yes.
But what I like about street art is that I think it's more easily accessible for people in 2020 to look at and reconcile with than like a painting from the 15th century.
But it's not...
It's weird.
The fact that it's not in a museum, though, it takes away the whole like pony show you're supposed to do when you like go on a third date, you know, to the fucking museum and you're like, oh, it's... Oh,
there's
really
also something,
enjoy
you know,
watercolor.
Here's another thing. Like when you go to a museum, you're looking at a painting and you're forcing yourself to look at a painting. What I love about street art, well, there's a shit ton of street art in Cincinnati.
Yes.
And what I love about it is that we drive by it, we walk by it, we don't even glance at it. But you know what, Adam, when it's gone, when it gets replaced, we all notice.
Yeah.
Because it's a part of the landscape.
Yeah. Yeah, but you could say that about like trees. You know, I say that about trees a lot.
100% though.
So, but I look
what's
at
what's better though than when you're just out and about looking at a tree you've never looked at before, and the tree just captures your attention because it's got like funny colored leaves or it's taller than you thought it was, and like that to me is more interesting than being forced into looking at a Monet.
See, I have the reverse reaction. I much prefer going to a museum because I don't get much out of street art. Like I said, I can't even say I would notice. I mean, I don't know, man. I always cite the scene in American Beauty with the bag, and I'm like, yeah, who gives a fuck?
That's a little different, though. Because that's Sam Mendes forcing his metaphor down your throat. That's what that is.
That's fine. I still think the guy is interested in the same stuff.
It's like, oh, look at this bag. I don't
seemingly
think...
like a disposable thing, you know, that actually...
Do you think it's pretentious, though? Because I think the problem with the plastic bag is that it's pretentious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Not all street, like graffiti, like whatever. In a way, like I was finding Banksy a little pretentious.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't care.
From a lens from today, I would say it's fair to say Banksy's a little pretentious, but at the time, I don't, that's the thing. It's you know, 20 hindsight's 20/20, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
To a degree. And I, you know, I think there has to be at least some level of appreciation for the people who paved the way.
Yeah, sure.
And I find that really fascinating.
Yeah, and I think it's also just really sexy. I think the idea of going out in the middle of the night and putting art up there and you're running from the law and, like, you know, the community is mad at you because you've tagged their buildings. I just think that's really fucking cool and badass.
You like that?
You don't find that badass? I mean, the fact that there's a criminal element to it?
I think it adds an element of sexiness.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
I guess.
Of course.
But, you know, even to me, it doesn't even have to be the sort of illegal underground aspect of it. Like I said, in Cincinnati, we have all these murals everywhere. When I was saying we have, like, street art, I'm not talking about graffiti. I'm talking we have murals, like, sanctioned by the city, murals all over these old buildings.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's one of my favorite parts about being in the city is seeing all of these amazing murals of local artists who are, mm-hmm. you know, putting up different messages, or, you know, some are just like, you know, we love Cincinnati, essentially, just like that kind of thing.
Yep.
But some are more deep.
It doesn't force itself upon you.
Right.
But you're not forcing yourself when you're in a museum. You're making an active choice to stand there and appreciate
I've
it.
Never made an active choice to go to a museum.
I make an active choice all the time, though. And I'm
but
like,
in fairness, of the three of us, I would assume that Adam is the most most appreciative of fine art.
No doubt.
Frankly.
No sure. doubt.
That, you know.
It's what? A low bar, but no doubt.
I go to Broadway.
I mean, so do I, but.
You don't feel like when you go to a museum, you're kind of forcing it?
No, because I can just leave.
You feel like you're just stumbling around and you're just organically just like, oh, look at that painting in the corner.
You could walk right by it.
Well, I also especially feel that way because, you know, my girlfriend studied fine art.
Yeah. Oh, well,
and
that's
so I feel
true.
Like I have to, like, go where she's going, and she's seeing things that I can't see because I just don't, my brain doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, guys, I don't know. Maybe this movie is a piece of art in itself that, in terms of the, some of the elements didn't capture my attention. I don't know. Yeah, I don't find street art interesting in the slightest. I don't know. Obey is ripping off They Live. Good for you.
All right, Captain Cynical.
And but I'm serious. Like I said, the first half.
Are you telling me if Andre the Giant was looming over you, you wouldn't obey? Is that what you're trying to say right now?
Inconceivable.
What an unbelievably large man. What a.
He's enormous.
Every time you see him, it is shocking.
Have you seen that documentary about Andre the Giant?
Yes, the HBO. Yeah, The Ringer did that.
Where Robin Wright is like, we would be on location,
right?
And his hands were so big, and I would be really, really cold, and then he would come over and cuff my head
to
keep my head warm.
Right. Yeah.
You He's could a wear, giant.
You could wear yes. Andre the Giant's hand for
He's
a hat.
Fucking enormous.
That man is so fucking huge. Yes. And Adam, as a fellow small man, I think you can really appreciate, like,
bigness.
He dwarfs Shaq.
Yes.
Have you seen photos of Shaq next to Kevin Hart?
Yeah,
exactly.
He dwarfs Shaq. He's enormous.
I know. He's fucking big. That's fine.
He's the size of a small elephant.
Oh, man. R.I.P.
What
a
shit.
Legend. Yeah. What a legend. How tall was he? He was like 8 foot whatever.
What the fuck?
No, I don't think he was 8 foot.
I think he was.
Andre the Giant height. I think he was 7'4".
Oh, 7'4". You're right.
Holy
shit. He was only 7'4".
That's fucking tall.
That's tall.
That's really tall.
I know it's really tall, but I thought he was even taller.
That's like a foot. How tall is Shaq? 6'8"?
No, I think he's at least 7'1", maybe.
Oh, 7'1". Okay. Yeah. So he's 3 inches taller than Shaq and maybe 150 pounds heavier.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Build weight, 520 pounds.
Holy shit.
Right.
Oh, my God, dude.
Enormous.
How old was he when he died? He was pretty young because the gigantism. Yeah. That was.
Yeah, I was going to say he was.
And the documentary talks about how he always sort of knew that his life was.
He was always in trouble. Always had health issues.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Poor guy is right. Good documentary, by the way. It's really good. Bill Simmons produced that. It was really good. So anyway, so does it matter if this movie is real or not? That is the question.
I don't know. I mean, I was thinking, like, because I read about this a little bit and I was, you know, everyone was curious as to whether or not it was. And I'm like, I was toiling with that as to if I would like this movie more or less if it was real. And I don't.
Let me ask you. Yeah. Last year, we watched a documentary about Damien Hirst. Uncovering a underwater treasure trove of art.
So bad.
And the entire thing was fake. It was bullshit. Right?
Yes.
And I didn't tell you guys it was bullshit until after we talked about it for a bit.
Right.
And how did that make you feel?
I hated it.
Right. So, yes, I think it matters if this movie is fake or not. But I think that it should be preserved in a way that we should not actively seek that answer.
Here's the difference. That movie
don't get me wrong. Damien Hirst is way more a piece of shit.
Yeah. That movie
he is the epitome of art is a commodity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy is, you know.
And that was the point he was trying to prove. The movie was called Treasures from the Wreck of the Unbelievable. I think it was 2 years ago we watched this.
Is that not one of the worst names you've ever heard?
Yeah, bad name. The whole point of that documentary was, gotcha, haha, you fell for it. And that was basically it. There wasn't much more thematically there beyond that. This, I thought, was getting at a lot more interesting and complex ideas.
I agree.
And I think you can get at those ideas whether or not you're using real footage. You know what I mean? And to a certain extent, all documentaries are fake, right? You are not seeing an uncut version of reality. Things are selected for certain emotional purposes. It is not straight journalism. You are not seeing the raw footage. You are getting an artistic representation of real life.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be an element of insincerity to a documentary. The point is the emotional resonance real? Is the stuff that the documentarian is getting at real? It can be an artificial portrayal of real human experience.
Well, yeah.
And I think that's what this is.
Well, because then it's like, it's really no different than doing like a narrative film.
It is exactly right.
Toiling with the same.
There's a reason why we call them both movies.
Yeah.
You know?
And I was going to say, like, at the end of it all, it was beginning to gel. And I was like, okay, I actually find the ideas that are presented here far more interesting than the people themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually appreciated what it was saying about art and also what it was saying about the people who consume art. And also what it takes to be a quote-unquote artist. So that was, I guess, where the film really came alive for me. And, I guess it could be fake. It could be totally real, but the preservation of those ideas is more important. And it is. Mm-hmm. They certainly are.
Yeah, movie making is fake. It's actors, it's a script, it's cinematography. None of that is real.
Nope.
And it's all manipulation to a certain extent, emotional manipulation. The question is, are the ideas underneath the surface real? And are they real to the filmmaker?
Do they touch the people?
Yes, and that is enough for me. After watching this documentary, and I really enjoy it, I can safely say that Banksy is hinting at ideas that he has actually thought about, the idea of regret and the idea of capitalism in an artistic space, and a lot of resentment towards others that became successful in his own field. He's felt all of those emotions and he's now conveying them in an artistic way. Whether or not we call it a documentary, I think, is irrelevant.
Yeah.
But it is still a documentary, I think.
It is.
Yeah. So
I like the movie. It's a good movie.
Okay.
Don't worry.
So, because if this is not true, it would make Banksy a giant hypocrite. I have to assume that he actually directed this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have to assume that he actually made this movie and he didn't hire a bunch of people to make it for him.
You would hope. Yeah. Because you're right. If he didn't, then it would.
And he's always struck me as a very intellectual person.
Yeah.
And a very talented person. So I would not be surprised if he could make a movie of this caliber.
He said that he reviewed hundreds of hours of footage for this, that he went through all the Mr. Brainwash stuff, and it was just like an incredibly arduous process.
Which I believe.
Yeah.
That must have sucked. Could you imagine?
Well, that's the thing. He wasn't just constructing a film. He had to deconstruct something that someone else made and reassemble it.
Man, how long did this take to make?
I'm sure quite a lot of time.
Christ.
So, but I want to talk about some of the really interesting editing choices. The majority of them just being juxtaposing what Mr. Brainwash says he did with what he actually did.
Mm-hmm.
was brilliant and hilarious every single time.
Yeah.
And it would be little things that were inconsequential, but it just like illustrated how out of touch this guy was with reality.
Yeah.
Right. So like he would say, like, when he first met the Obey sticker guy,
Shepherd Fairey.
Yeah. When he first met him, he goes, Mr. Brainwash tells the camera, "Oh, I didn't say anything. I didn't ask him anything. I just walked in and started filming." And then the first thing they show him do is asking him a question. "I didn't ask him anything." Asks him a question. "Oh, so what is that there?" Like these little moments of that juxtaposition, I thought was hilarious and brilliant.
Well, the movie is funny. As, like, yes. More than anything, like the part of the reason why, like, even if I wasn't necessarily like invested in the lives of these people, they're just, their hijinks are so hilarious to me, and what they say about each other, and what that guy, Terry, I forget his last name, but who's Mr. Brainwash, is just saying about the people around him was just, it's great to watch a crazy person work.
Oh yeah.
it's funny. 'Cause like he tricked everyone around him for so long into thinking he was first a legit documentary filmmaker, and second, he was actually a true appreciator of art. But the reality is, none of that was true. He just liked holding a camera, and he just wanted to feel important. That's all it is.
Yeah, of course.
He's just a guy who wanted to feel important.
Don't we all?
And holding a camera made him do that. It made him feel that way.
Yeah.
He had FOMO, some serious FOMO, fear of missing out. Had to videotape everything just in case, right?
If I'm to say anything, by the way, it's funny we're talking about this now, but in figuring out whether or not it was real or it was not real, the one detail that made me go, maybe it's not real.
I think
real,
it's the same one for me.
It's the motivation for Terry filming everything. I'm like, that
exactly.
is so obvious and on the nose. Like, that's exactly what I thought. It is literally exactly what I thought. I wasn't there for the death of somebody who was close to me. Now I need to capture everything. And I just don't believe it.
I felt the exact same way.
I just don't
believe it. When Nico mentioned earlier that this could be fake, that scene came to my mind.
Thank you.
And I was like, that just seems, something about it just doesn't feel right.
It's so movie-like is the problem.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's
it is screenwriting 101. Yeah. This is the event that has to happen. What is the character motivation in order to get there?
And it's like, I don't.
It would have been more believable if he's just like, I just always did it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know why.
It's a compulsion.
I think the biggest thing is because a guy this delusional should not be able to pinpoint the reason behind his behavior.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
That's a fair point.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that is a good point.
Mm. So that was a little, I'm with you there. A little weird.
Yeah.
Look, I think you might be right, though, that this is sort of a mishmash of both documentary and fiction. That probably is the case, that Mr. Brainwash is actually this guy, and Banksy maybe created a couple story details to make this story make more sense,
mm-hmm.
right? Or to Hollywood it up a little bit. And that's probably true. Like the Disneyland moment, I think of, that's maybe it's possible that the Disneyland security guards did not know what was happening, but it is also possible that they went to Disneyland that day with the intention of getting arrested and having to destroy the footage for the big movie moment.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be that organic, but again, I'm totally fine with it. Like, I think this is an awesome story. And if this was a scripted narrative, I think it would be awesome too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the end of the day, though, in a scenario like that, they would not have told Disney what they were doing.
Right.
So it still has a guerrilla style to
What's
it.
What's the name of that movie that they shot in Disneyland without telling them?
I didn't even know. No idea.
There was an entire, it was like a horror movie that they shot at Disneyland. But of course, Disney doesn't let you shoot Disneyland if you're not a Disney movie.
A horror movie that they shot in Disney.
And it was like a big lawsuit. People went in with like small camcorders and they shot it like guerrilla style.
That is weird.
And it was a big controversy from a couple years ago.
I don't know.
Never heard of this.
Disneyland movie shot secretly. Let's see. Escape from Tomorrow. They shot this Disneyland movie in secret.
That's weird.
Independent horror movie from 2013, written and directed by Randy Moore, tells the story of an unemployed father having increasingly bizarre experiences and disturbing visions on the last day of a family vacation at Disneyland. It was it was a personal selection of Roger Ebert shown at the Sundance Film Festival. I remember this being a big thing. Had shot most of it on location in both Disney World and Disneyland without permission from the Disney Corporation. Due to Disney's reputation of being protective of its intellectual property, the cast and crew use guerrilla filmmaking techniques to avoid attracting attention, such as keeping their scripts on their iPhones and shooting on handheld video cameras similar to those used by park visitors. So it's like they pretended to be tourists and they were just like, you know, filming their family, but really they were shooting a movie.
I see.
That's incredible.
Cool. Maybe we should do that at some point.
Interesting. Maybe.
It was compared to the work of Roman Polanski and David Lynch. However, many who saw it expressed strong doubts that the film would be shown to a wider audience due to the legal issues involved and the negative depiction of the parks. At the time of the premiere, Disney stated that it was aware of the film since the online supplement to Disney A to Z has included an entry to the film. Yeah. So. There you go.
We should check that out. But another thing I really... Back to this film. Another thing I really liked was... another minor detail here. Banksy, when he's, you know, filming his one-on-one with the camera, and he's obviously all, you know, they've blacked out his face, he's wearing like a dark hood, and they have the lighting in such a way so you can't see his face, and they have a voice modulator or whatever. Again, just another appreciation for how intelligent he is. He is aware that you can't see and hear him properly, so he uses a lot of hand gestures and things in a way that is... you wouldn't normally see people do, I feel like.
Right, yeah.
Do you notice that too?
Yeah, I do understand what you mean, yeah. He's trying to be more expressive.
With it's just, you know, language. That's a minor detail. It doesn't really add to the film at all, but I just appreciated it in
it's
a way, I guess.
It's possible that that's not Banksy, by the way.
That's also true.
Yeah, it's true. There's always been, people have always speculated that he's a British guy, and you could hear pretty clear British accent, so they could have just hired a British guy.
Yeah, of course.
Just to make you, just to, you know, reinforce that. You know, I talked to Michaela. She watched this with me, or at least a portion of it. And, you know, she knows a lot about Banksy. So she was telling me that some people think it could be like a team of people or
right.
Banksy's just an idea, sort of like Anonymous.
Right. Or he's the Joker.
Kind of like the James Bond theory.
Well, I was thinking for Mr. Robot, F Society, that kind of thing almost.
Yeah.
Where it's not really a person, it's just a concept almost.
Right.
And like,
they
lots of artists.
Mask, yeah.
Yeah, lots of artists get a chance to like make real art or something as this Banksy figure.
But this is the reason why the question has to remain ambiguous, because these answers would be incredibly satisfying, but they are not likely the answers. Mm-hmm. Like, all of these theories are probably wrong, and it's just
way more interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
The reality is he's probably just like some guy.
Yeah. Exactly right.
But
lives in his mom's basement.
I loved when he pulled out the boxes of forged bills.
Oh yeah, that was cool. I really like that part. I have to
That shed some light on Banksy's morality too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he talks at the story about how he forged all these fake banknotes that looked similar, but when you actually looked carefully, the woman on the note wasn't the queen.
Right.
Right.
Who was it? Diana.
That's a good question.
I think it was
I don't know. Yeah, but it was clear. You know, if you looked carefully, it was clearly fake. The expression on the face wasn't right, but they were pretty convincing. And he was going to go on top of a building and throw all the bills off, right? But first, he went to like a fair and he gave a few of them out. And these people went up and they paid for food with them and walked away.
Yeah,
and
he just let it happen.
And he was like, "Oh shit. I just forged $1,000,000." And he's like, so I can't do this because this is forgery. Like, it looks too good.
Right.
Essentially.
Right. Yeah. You gotta be careful.
And so he just has these boxes filled with fake cash. He's like, I don't know what to do with it. You know, even just holding on to that would be, I'm pretty sure, a felony.
I think, yeah.
You should probably burn it all.
Well,
I mean, not if he made the argument that it was art. I mean, I don't know.
I guess you could. Isn't that so funny? It's all fine if it's in the name of art.
Well, where do you draw the line between it being a gimmick dollar bill and an actual counterfeit?
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that's why the crime would be something like intent to forge or intent to whatever.
Well, because like at a certain point, I could just like doodle a fake dollar bill and I could give it to someone and they wouldn't take it. But he's also doing just a similar thing. It just looks more advanced.
Yeah, I was thinking like I was thinking of Catch Me If You Can, where it gets to the point where Leo's pretty much making real checks,
right?
And then it's like, okay, so what if he's making them and it's forgery? If they're that convincing, it's like it's just paper,
right?
You know,
Right.
I don't know.
I think it's for the U.S. government to decide. I think that's true. I think that's the line.
That's also true. Listen to us, U.S. government, listening to this podcast.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
What else did you have? Anything?
No, that's it for me. Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was fun.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun.
I'm glad you liked it. I really liked it, too, when I first saw it. I'll admit, it was way more interesting to me at age 15 than it was at age 25.
Did you rewatch it?
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's good.
But I still remember a lot of stuff from it. And yeah, it was definitely like, oh, Banksy, who is this guy?
Yeah.
See, that wasn't to me the focus or care very
much. Certainly not anymore. I no longer care about that. But when I was 15, I definitely cared about it.
Because it's just, you know, at this point, I've accepted that Banksy is this elusive figure. I've accepted his place in society and whatever, right? Mm. But this movie's not even really about that. It's about this weird French dude who is crazy, and it's about art.
Yep. I like that.
And I think that it had a lot to say. I'm not really satisfied on any of the answers of what this movie's really saying. I don't think anyone is. I don't think it's trying to satisfy you in that way. I think it's just trying to prod and poke and ask some questions and make you think. But I don't think it's as black and white with a moral.
No.
As you guys might, but.
Well, the heart of the movie is just those ideas like we talked about. I mean, like right. I said, and I am on your side to a specific degree where it's like, you know, I don't really care if it's real or not. Those ideas are interesting enough. So.
Okay. Game time. So I have a feeling Banksy's net worth is unknown.
Do you want to look it up?
I will look it up and I'll see. But if not, I do have a fallback plan, and that is Andre the Giant.
Okay.
So let's try Banksy first.
I bet you there's an estimation.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you had a pretty...
There's got to be an estimation.
You'd have a pretty good idea based on the amount of art he's sold, right?
Right. They have a net... They have a... almost all of his art has a value associated with it.
You think someone bought that elephant, by the way?
No.
I have an answer for you.
Really?
Yeah, there's got to be an estimation.
Okay.
So
Banksy.
Drew Carey's worth $165 million U.S. dollars.
That is correct.
Or to estimate Banksy's net worth.
We have a friend that went to a taping of The Price is Right, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, Natalia went.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, I saw it, yeah.
Yeah, she was telling me all about that. She had a good time.
By the way, guys, we do have an updated Drew Carey net worth.
Whoa!
Oh, that's a big deal.
That is a huge deal.
And it's a lot more.
Are you serious?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What is it?
As of now, Drew Carey has an estimated net worth of more than $190 million.
Oh, look at that. Yeah, February 19th.
Yep.
Just updated.
There you go. So,
oh yeah, my God, 190 upwards of. Wow.
This is a shocking development. Yeah. Well, wait a minute, though. I'm seeing some websites that still have him at 165.
What's the latest article saying?
It says as of 2020, I'm seeing.
Do you want to go by that?
Well, all these. Nah, no. Okay. We'll go with your number. 190. All right. 190. That actually makes the math a little easier.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
$190 million.
Good for you, Drew Carey.
The net worth
of
Drew Carey. You crazy son of a gun.
I'm going, it takes 1.9 Banksy's to get to Drew Carey. So he's worth $100 million off of all of his art.
Okay. Nick.
I was originally going to put him at like a 1.2, but seeing with the recent development, I'm going to put him at a 1. A 1 to 1.
Really?
Wow. Nice.
Did Nick get this again?
$190 million.
Nick could be on a roll.
Okay.
We'll see.
The actual net worth of Banksy. Street artist. $50 million. Ooh. Adam, you just won this week's edition of How Many Drew Carey.
Yeah. It's like those damn Irish whiskey sales.
I don't want to talk about that.
That ooh.
I don't want to talk about that.
hog.
Actually, you can tell the story if you want. I don't care.
Dude, I mean, well, I don't know all the details about like the number of people we had because wasn't that a big decider, right? Like we were going to lose and then he's like, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt.
I've been going to trivia for 2 years. I started going with Zach and his lovely wife, Jackie. Now I go with Adam and a bunch of other fucking idiots. We have never won a round of trivia ever. I've done the math. 90 weeks so far. 90 weeks of trivia.
The closest we came was when I was there.
Yes.
And it wasn't even because of me. That was just luck.
Well, I think it's been trumped now, Nick.
Okay. We never won. This week, we bring our team. 7 members on the team. You're really only supposed to have 6 members. 6 is the cap. 7 members. Now, for weeks, we've always said, because there are 2 teams that always go with us, that always kick our ass, we'll say, whatever, just take us out of the running for the prize. We're not going to win the prize anyway. We'll just have fun and we'll play with 8 people. And we've done that week after week. But our host, Joe, who has been on the podcast before, will say to us, one of these weeks, you're going to have more people and you're going to win and you're going to not win the prize and you're going to hate yourselves. Well, this week, wouldn't you know it, we tie for first place with 7 members. Tie for first. And he turns to me and goes, guys, I have a funny story. But he says, I'll forgive it. I'll let you guys try to win in a tiebreaker. We get to the tiebreak round. 5 questions, best of 5. We get 1 answer correct out of 5. The opposition gets 1 answer correct out of 5. Double overtime. Wow. We're going to penalty kicks. Penalty kick time, guys. Closest to the real number wins. The question, what percentage of whiskey sales in the United States are Irish whiskeys? What percent, Nick, would you say?
Are Irish whiskeys?
Yes.
34%.
34%. You know what Adam's answer was?
Like 90.
Exact.
Because I'm stupid.
90% was Adam's.
90?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you forgetting about bourbon?
Yes.
The answer is yes. We were forgetting about bourbon and we were forgetting about scotch and we were forgetting about all of these things.
Oh my goodness.
We heard the question and we figured, if they're asking it, it must be a significant number. So we said 46%.
Which is not, it shouldn't be a bad answer.
We cut Adam's answer in half. The opposition, 22%. The correct answer, 6%.
Wow. That's surprisingly low, I feel like. Although bourbon's got to be high. Bourbon's got to be like 45%. I mean, really,
it's only Jameson, right?
Yeah.
Are there any other Irish whiskeys that we're forgetting?
There's some.
Because we were brainstorming it. We couldn't think of any others.
There's like some independent names, but obviously that's smaller. So.
Yeah.
I thought that was way too small.
I just thought if they're asking the question, it has to be a number worth asking about, right?
But we've never come so close in our lives, I think, to winning.
No, we lost in double overtime, and that's it.
We put up a fight, though.
I turned to you that night. You saw how physically disappointed I was.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, I would trade a Yankees World Series for this right now.
Oh, it was bad.
Dude, I would let Garrett Cole get Tommy John surgery right now and take us out of contention for the World Series if we could win a fucking trivia night.
There's just something so humiliating about it at this point.
So
90 weeks
without a win. All right, that's it. Nick, anything?
We got a new Fantasy Book of the Month just came out.
Cool.
Go ahead and give that a listen.
You're celebrating women, so I don't know if I can
celebrate.
Well, it is Women's History Month.
Yeah, it is. I believe today is actually Women's History Day.
Oh.
Okay.
So
it's also Documentary Month. So
yeah, I think we trump that.
That is true, yeah. That's just going to be on the Google calendars. Too many thoughts, Documentary Month.
Well, everyone on Twitter seems to care about it. So.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Listen to 2 Cents this week because, again, Twitter has been listening.
Jesus Christ. Stop it.
If you want to hear, I think by far and away the wildest story Rob and I have ever been involved in, just go listen to 2 Cents. It is worth listening. If you have not listened to 2 Cents in a while, this is one that you're going to want to pay attention to. I will just say, as the tease, in 11 years on Twitter, I don't think I've had the amount of tweets combined that I had in one day over the weekend. And you can find out why on the website.
For better or worse?
Yeah.
Mm. Specifically for worse?
I would say for worse. We made some enemies this week on Twitter.
Yeah, you did.
Didn't think I'd ever be involved in something like this, but I have. And what else? Anything? Movie Hall of Fame this week. We're talking 1960 finally.
Yeah.
That'll be a fun time.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Have you watched all the movies?
No.
Have you seen any of the movies?
Yeah. Well, no. I haven't watched any of the ones I'm supposed to watch yet.
You fucker. All right.
But I've seen some of the movies, yeah.
Some of them, yeah.
Okay. Good. That's it.
We're done.
I love you very much. And come back.
Please.
You here?
We need you.
You guys have been so naughty.
Naughty.